Hey, hi, you are listening to Trading Pages, the sisterly podcast where we challenge each other to read books we would normally never, ever pick up at the bookstore. We share an immense love for books.
Just maybe not that book. Each week we give each other a new book to tackle and then come together to discuss what we liked, what we didn't like, and who knows, maybe we'll even find something we love.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I'm the older sister.
And I'm Bronwyn, the younger sister, but not the youngest sister. I can't talk shit about her this week. She just gifted me her old laptop.
Sweet. Thanks for joining us on our adventures with Trading Pages.
Thanks to our mom for sponsoring this episode. She absolutely did give me money this week, but it was so that I would groom her oversized golden retriever. Doodle. Dog. Week, I challenged Allie to read The Manual of Detection by Jedediah Barry.
And I had B read Cinder by Marissa Meyer. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. That's the great thing about an intro is that even if you don't get it exactly perfect, it's still fucking funny and usable.
We are people. We are not robots. So just to start us off with, I'd like to give a few shout outs to a couple of podcasts. First of all, if you have not yet listened to the Bumbling Sanity episode where Allie and I were guests, you absolutely should.
The fucking marathon. We easily doubled our normal run time simply because of who we are as people.
And then I had to drive back to our town that was 2 hours away after that whole marathon. And we did not talk about this on the podcast ever, but like I had immense rage on the drive home. Like,
oh yeah.
I was like having issues on the drive home where I was like, because there was construction and we had to drive 25 miles an hour during a certain point, and I was irate. But anyway, so if you have not listened to it,
that was really annoying though.
Listen to it. There are ghosts. We talk about books. We talk about parenting. It was a really fun episode. And Andrew and Amanda are awesome. Listen to Bumbling Sanity or Nerd or The Darkest Corner, whichever podcast, because they're great. Also, I just recently was a guest on The Social Hour with Deese Casillas.
It was an awesome episode. I listened to it last week. It was really good, y'all. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to record with Deese. He is a very witty guy, and he is he's definitely fun to record with. And we ended up going on a tangent about J.K. Rowling, and I was like, Allie's going to be really mad because she's not here.
Stole the J.K. Rowling discussion that I've been asking you to have, and I'm like, she's fucking having the conversation with Deese without me.
I briefly mentioned it, and then Deese was the one who was like, okay, well, this is becoming a tangent now. So I had no intention of going off about it until he did.
Yeah. Things that I need to talk about J.K. Rowling. We will save that for a different Patreon episode because I have, like, lots of stuff to say on the subject, and I need to process some things through with you. But anyway, and I really enjoyed that episode with Deese, and I was really nervous because you had kind of said that he can be, like, very unfiltered, and so I wasn't really sure what to expect, but it was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. It was a very low-key episode, and I definitely appreciated that, because as a person with anxiety, I would not have spoken up if he happened to cross one of my boundaries, but he did not. He was very respectful, nice, and it was a lot of fun. So thirdly, I also want to give a brief shout-out to Station Arcadia. I can take absolutely zero credit for this podcast, but I am doing voice acting in it, and I absolutely love the character that I am voice acting. I am extremely attached to her and would absolutely 100% die for her. But Station Arcadia is a new podcast, and they just released their first episode last Friday as we're recording this, and I hadn't listened to the first episode yet, and it is produced so well. The music, the Foley, the voice acting, it is great. And it has also been absolutely wonderful being in this Discord server with the cast and crew. They're awesome people. And Station Arcadia is a steampunk, dieselpunk solar punk queer pod scripted podcast. And if that isn't enough to get you to listen to it, then, you know, I don't know what will, because it's kind of amazing. So I had I tried to get mom to listen to the first episode today, because I was like, look, I'm really proud of this. This is so cool. I'm doing this. And she, and my voice is in the spot. I read the spot at the very beginning, and she goes, oh, that's you. And she sat and she very patiently listened to the first minute or so, and then she goes, are you in this episode? And I say, no, I'm not voice acting in this episode. She goes, okay. And I'm like, you don't want to listen to the rest of it, do you? And she goes, not really. It's not super duper my thing. It was so cute, though,
because she's so nice about it, though. Be like, well, it's not super duper my thing. Like, at least she tried. But you know what? Even if it's not super duper her thing, she'll listen to the episode that you're voice acting in, and she'll listen to the whole fucking thing, because that's the kind of boss. But like, she is, like, she's amazing.
She goes I don't understand it, but I'm very proud of you. And I'm like, oh, thanks, mom.
That's so sweet. I don't get it. It's not really my thing, but that's really great. That's an accomplishment. I mean, like, yeah. This lady, I mean, how many band, like, marching band competitions like lame ass High School Musical shit she sat through for the two of us, thought that she was through all of it, then had another kid who is equally a theater nerd and is like going through all of these like rudimentary performances, and like sits through multiple performances, not just one. She won't just come to one of your performances. She'll come to multiple times to support you and smile the whole time and like be engaged and enjoy it. And so, you know what? Thanks, mom, for always showing up, even if it's not your thing. We love you.
This is why mom is a sponsor of our podcast, because she is the MVP and we love her very dearly.
The emotional currency.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that you don't understand my when I say steampunk, I'm pretty sure those were absolutely foreign words to her. But
what's a steampunk?
What's a steampunk? But it actually is extremely appropriate that we're talking about this right now, because
I know
the book that I read was actually like kind of diesel punk, so it's fairly appropriate that we are talking about it. So please listen to Station Arcadia. You can find them on Twitter under the handle Station Arcadia. They have a website that we will link in the show notes, and you can find Station Arcadia wherever you can find podcasts. So please give it a listen. It has been a labor of love, and so many skilled people are involved in this project who just really absolutely love doing it, and you can tell. So please, they did not pay me any money.
but that's like, should. Those projects are great, though, because you really are doing it just because it feeds your soul and makes you happy to do it. So Sandemonium and all of that stuff too. So
yeah, it's really, no, they would not have to pay me a cent, and I absolutely do not expect a cent, except for this spot is going to cost them $100. Eliana, if you're listening, my PayPal is
Well, and also on that note, we do have a Patreon episode. So if you haven't gone to listen to it yet, we still have not had enough people, new patrons on the Patreon account. Bronwyn, will you please say it? Because I always screw it up when I say it. The Pants Bending Patreon. I can never fucking get it right.
You think I can fucking get it right?
But like, if you, we'll make sure it's in the show notes if I fuck this up. But it's like patreon.com/pantspending or
patreon.com/pantspending.
Okay, yeah, patreon.com/pantspending. If we are still waiting to get our 10 new patrons on there. We have embarrassing childhood photos that we have yet to release, and they are just burning a hole in my Google Drive. They need to be released to the world. So if you have not yet, go and listen to our bonus patron episode. It's pretty hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that probably about sums it up.
Yeah.
So
I don't really have anything extra special, and I'm super excited to hear your thoughts. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we will be discussing Cinder by Marissa Meyer.
It is my turn to go first.
I know. We actually looked it up this week.
We are professional podcasters.
Yeah. All right. We'll catch you back here in just a second. Hey, welcome back, and it is time to hear Bronwyn's thoughts on her assigned reading for this episode, which was, it's just like, I really like this book a whole lot, and I'm getting a bit nervous now. I always get so nervous, but it is called Cinder. Incidentally, I gave her two Cinderella retellings in a row, and I think I've realized that I just really have a thing for fairy tale and mythology retellings, because that would explain like my obsession with Rick Riordan and just a lot of different things. Even if it's only like loosely based on existing fairy tales or mythology, I just kind of have a thing for it, along with romance. But anyway, Cinder by Marissa Meyer. We have a futuristic plague. We have cyborgs. We have robots or androids.
This is great timing for me to read this book, by the way.
Incidentally, I was just looking at it and be like, oh yeah, this is a great book. I think that she might actually enjoy it. I hope that she might enjoy it. And I've kind of like missed the mark a few times. I'm like, I think this one will be an easy read. It'll be enjoyable. It's sci-fi. It's got some cool elements to it. Completely fucking forgot about the whole futuristic plague. That's killing everyone.
Which is, like, the main concept of the book, so.
Well, like, I remember that, but at the same time, like, I didn't. Because I was just remembering, like, the romance with the prince, of course.
Of course you were, though.
But anyway, so Cinder, she's a mechanic. I love that. Kind of reminded me of Kaylee in that way. She's a second-class citizen because of her cyborg status.
Boo.
Yes.
Boo. Cyborg arms are better than regular arms.
She has a stepmother and a stepsister. You know, so just like Cinderella, her stepsister is ill. But I think she has a better relationship with her stepsister in this version. There's a prince, and he's making very difficult decisions for how best to help his people. And, you know, just struggling with a lot of different things and morality and what is right and what is wrong. And how is he best going to help his people and lead his people? Yeah, and this is a part of an entire series. So Cinder is book one.
Which you did not warn me about, by the way.
Sorry, I forgot to mention.
Absolutely did not warn me that there would be a cliffhanger.
Well, lucky for you, they're all on Hoopla, so you can go find them there. So Scarlet is book two. I really love. What is book three? Book three is the Rapunzel.
Wasn't that the
hold on.
I feel like it was the Cess or Kesser.
Cress. That's what it
Cress,
is. Because
right.
She's Crescent Moon.
So close.
Yeah. So it goes Cinder, Scarlet, Cress, and then the Snow White, which is Winter, I believe, is what her name is. And then there's also a novella for this one as well. So very exciting. She has a few other series as well. She wrote The Renegade. So really amazing stuff coming out from Marissa Meyer. Absolutely love her. Good for you, Marissa. But anyway, okay, so let's hear your thoughts. Do you already have some talking points, or do you want to tell me what you loved about it right off the bat?
Well, so here's the thing about this book is that I actually, for the most part, very much enjoyed reading it.
Yay!
I did not have trouble getting through it. I thought that it was a really interesting take on a Cinderella story, and I could appreciate that I could pick out who was supposed to be who in this story and what it was supposed to be representing. I loved the concept of her losing her whole foot. That is metal AF. Like, in, you know, her cyborg leg instead of a slipper. That was fucking neat as hell. And it had just enough of a change to the story that it kept you on your toes. Like, there were a lot of parts that I was really shocked that happened. By the way, spoilers. There's always spoilers.
We just really struggle with not saying shit we're not supposed to. So, sorry if you haven't read it.
So the character, I forget her name now, but the sister character that she got along with, she fucking died. She straight up died. And I was very shocked that that happened in the book. I was not expecting that at all. And so there were a lot of different kind of twists and turns. I did expect that she was going to be Princess Celine. I did kind of have an inkling about that, especially with the way that Dimitri was kind of acting around her. And, you know, I kind of also figured that she was Lunar. Like, none of these things really shocked me all that much. But I did think that what made it important was that it was not something where I was like, oh, my God, Cinder, how do you not fucking realize this? It made sense that the character would have been blindsided by it, which is what made me kind of okay with, yes, obviously she's Princess Celine. I absolutely loved Aiko. Is a wonderful.
I knew you would love her.
Wonderful fucking a robot baby who tries to wear lipstick, and I love her. She was so good, and they killed Aiko, so I was like, "All right, get fucked."
And you gotta read book two.
Yeah. Well, I'm still on the fence about whether or not I want to read book two because I have not gotten to the main hang-up that I have with this book. I do want to mention that they called Aiko an android, and per all of the Wikipedia and things like that, Aiko is not an android.
Of course,
she's
you did fucking research to prove me wrong and say, like, well, actually, it's not an android. It's
So it was just, it's something that always bugs me when people say androids and they really mean robots, because an android is a robot or other artificial being designed to resemble a human and are often made from flesh like material. That is from Wikipedia. But if it makes anybody feel any better, in Star Wars they call C-3PO a cyborg, which is also incorrect because he's not a cyborg. And then my friend Corey, when I brought the subject up with him, he said, what if C-3PO has a human brain? And I told him to never speak to me again because that is horrifying.
Ooh, no, I don't like that at all.
Right?
No. I never thought about it. He always says, I am C-3PO, human, cyborg, relationship. He's not a cyborg. Well, he's supposed to be relating with humans and cyborg.
I don't know. But it just, yeah, they describe him as a cyborg. And so, and they also describe them as droids, which would be like androids. So,
well,
kind of the
R2 is a droid, and C-3PO is a droid. He'd be more of an android. I would hazard
C-3PO
to say
C-3PO.
C-3PO
would count as an android, I think.
Yeah, I think he'd be an android. R2-D2 is definitely straight up droid. He's just a droid.
Are you ready for the subject that is going to horrify you?
Okay.
That I think that you probably will not remember.
Okay. Because there's always, like, some kind of random fucking detail, like the fact that a whole plague exists in the story. I get blind spots when I read.
Let me just really quickly on that. Can we just talk about how in the middle of the plague, the prince is throwing a ball? Excuse me, sir. We all should be sheltering in place. You're throwing a ball in the middle of a pandemic.
Where is your mask, Kai?
That really and truly, that was the part where it was like, I feel like this would be a written a lot differently if it was written today. Because they only quarantined the people who were sick, which obviously that does not fucking work. And I was like, I don't understand why if there is a plague, everybody is not like sheltering in place.
Sheltering in place or wearing masks all the time. Like we're doing now.
Yeah, and then, like, the prince throws this gigantic ball with Lunars, and Lunars are the ones who carry the disease. And so I was like, excuse me, sir, what are you doing? This is a bad idea.
Wait, is it known to everybody that Lunars carried the disease at that point? I can't remember.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this. Dimitri Erlon is an extremely problematic character.
Wait, is this the part that's going to blow my mind? Have we skipped to that?
It absolutely is. Okay. Because Dimitri Erlond, I don't know if
you remember
him.
He's like the doctor guy, like doctor mad scientist a little bit.
So he did not tell everybody that the Lunars were the ones who were carrying the diseases, but the Lunars did know. I don't know. It was that's not even a little bit of what I'm going to scratch the surface on. I don't know if you know this, but Dimitri in the book is supposed to represent the fairy godmother character, right?
Oh, is he? Okay, all right. Yeah, well, he is. Okay, yeah, because he transforms her into Princess Celine with his, like, weird chiropractor moves that he does.
Yeah, and he also, like, he's the one who brings her, like, her fancy robot arm and leg after she's in prison and, like, helps her discover who she really is.
Oh, yes. I forgot so about the fancy robot arm. Oh, man, yeah. It's really been a long time since I read this. Okay, yep. So fairy godmother transforms her into the beautiful cyborg princess that she is.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm not okay with this because Dimitri Erland is Nazi adjacent. And I was reading this book and I know that was
what. What?
Okay. So let me just refresh your memory because apparently you do not recall. So for everybody who has not read the book, let me just explain something.
Well, and just like, I read this a while ago, and Nazis were not nearly as much on my mind then as they are right now. I feel like we're really hypersensitive to Nazi shit right now. Let me just say that. Nazis were not as prevalent.
As Hank Green said so wisely, that's Nazi shit. That's Nazi shit. So, here's the thing. For those who have not read the book, Dr. Erland, I'm just going to call him that, he was trying to find a cure for the disease leishmaniasis. This is the plague that's going around. It's called leishmaniasis. And it is a disease where it, much like COVID-19, being in the same proximity as the person will get you sick. So what he did was he was pulling cyborgs. So cyborgs are like a second-class citizen. Mm-hmm. So he created the cyborg draft so that he could inject leishmaniasis into them, which when I talk to my lab friend, this is a summary of what she said, but that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
That's a summary? That's not how this works. Was it Sarah?
It was Sarah.
Okay. Hi, Sarah. Thanks. Thanks for that. Hi,
Sarah. She had a lot more, like, in detail stuff, and I was like, I could go over this, but I'm going to just, like, just go past it and just be like, I talked to a professional, and she said that's not how this works. So
so many experts and have them, like, just straight up on speed dial at any given time, and I don't have the resources you have.
I did but that on go purpose. Ahead. I surround myself with smart people, so, because I am very, very dumb, and I like to sound smart, so.
Okay, so I can't remember.
So, first of all, he's injecting them with the disease. This is, in fact, a death sentence. This is, like, if you get injected with leishmaniasis, you fucking die. Like, period, end of story. And so he had killed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cyborgs and was, like, taking a lower class and doing experiments on them and not really caring if they died or not.
Worst fairy godmother ever.
And, like, that's Nazi shit. So here's the thing that, like, makes this even worse is that, like, in the audiobook, it was a choice to give him a German accent.
I didn't listen to the audiobook.
And I was like, okay, was he supposed to be Nazi coded? Because that's also extremely racist towards German people and also very bad.
Why is the bad guy always gotta be German though?
Yeah, and I was like, ooh, oof. Ooh.
Okay, so this
there were plenty of other sick people that they could have tested this stuff on. Like, there were plenty of people in the quarantines that he could have
it on sick people or he was testing it on healthy people?
He was giving healthy cyborgs, so they were pulled in from the cyborg draft. So they were, like, literally their name got pulled out of a bucket or whatever, a ledger, and if you were cyborg, you got called from the cyborg draft to be tested on by Dr. Erlon.
Well, he was definitely, like, a pretty ambiguous character. Like, I definitely remember that he was not just, like, straight-up fairy godmother good guy, that it was actually quite
convoluted. I just feel like this is like unforgivable because
he does a lot of shit that's like pretty unforgivable because he was the one that made Cinder.
Like, oh, was he? Oh, that is a spoiler. Thanks a lot.
Way sorry. To fucking go. Oh shit. Sorry.
So no, it's okay. I don't plan on reading the rest of this series. So
I thought that was determined in book one, like because it's like
sure was
she
not.
Finds out. Oh, sorry. Well, spoiler for book two or three or I can't remember which one had it, but like that was a big. I swear he was the. Yeah. He might have been.
Nope.
But like,
so anyway, yeah. So anyway, like he claims that he was doing this to try and find Cinder. He was attempting to locate Princess Selene.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's why he did the cyborg draft. However, he and like this is where like this character became so frustrating was he found out she was Princess Selene from her DNA, from her blood sample DNA. So why could he not have, like, said, okay, let's do the cyborg draft, but I just need to get a blood type from you? Because there were sick people in quarantine. Like, he was truly trying to find a cure for leishmaniasis, so he could have gotten blood samples from those sick people who were in quarantine. And, you know, like, I mean, unfortunately, they were dying, but it would be better than infecting somebody.
So that was a bit of an unnecessary plot device to make him ambiguously good, but also not good. Perhaps, and that but maybe he,
He was really set out to be like kind of a good character. Like he is the fairy godmother character.
Yeah, but I think it was complicated. And then
you know he goes on to kind of be like, oh well, I can't use my glamour on anybody because I'm such a good guy, and I wouldn't use my glamour to, you know, like influence.
Well, and that was
anybody.
Making him go crazy too, because that was a exactly. part of it. Is that it was making him go crazy? So that's kind of what I thought was that he was like slowly losing his mind. He was still really intelligent,
But that's what's so frustrating is why wouldn't he have used if it was making him go fucking insane. Why wouldn't he have used like a little bit of his glamour? Because he had no problem using it to break her out of prison. So why couldn't he have used a little bit to be like, yes, it is extremely important that we get blood samples.
He saw that as like a higher cause because he was saving his princess.
Okay,
but then he also found a way to block it. Like he was able to install basically a chip into her to is this book one or is this book two?
This is book one. This is
okay.
You don't know it's him yet.
Yeah, you don't know that it's him, but she has a chip installed that allows her to hide her glamour, but then not go crazy from it. Which I thought that was an interesting thing too. That like holding your glamour in would make you go crazy.
Because it's just like a part of your DNA or whatever. But it made me frustrated that he didn't ever use it. Like, I understand if you're like, I don't want to use my glamour to influence people to make them like me or whichever. Mm-hmm. But like, he could have very easily have used it to
be like, listen,
it's really important that
people
we have. Yeah, he could have been like, it's very important that we get cyborgs of this age and this gender. And if somebody asked him why, just like slip a little bit of glamour in there. And like, it's not like,
because
you know,
reasons.
And then it still is for the greater good.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that's an interesting choice.
And he was going, if Cinder had not been Princess Selene, he would have straight up murdered her. That would have been the end of the story. He would have murdered a young teenage girl and wouldn't even have blinked an eye at it.
Yeah. No, and I mean that's a very interesting choice and there's a lot of good to this story, but one of my complaints about various stories, and not just this one, is manufactured conflict. Because there's plenty of legitimate conflict to be had in this story. It doesn't necessarily have to be that he's ambiguously good and bad. And I will also say, you know, as far as the audiobook production team goes, this podcast was not originally intended to talk about the reading it versus audiobook version of things, but I think a thing that we found to be pretty consistent is the audiobook production of a book is incredibly vital. Mm-hmm.
It really is.
In how the book is received. And also, can we stop making foreign people the go-to bad guys?
Seriously,
though.
Seriously. Like, making the German guy the evil crazy scientist, yeah. I was like, that is problematic
in so many ways. And the thing is like, they may have directed the narrator to do that and say, we want you to do a German accent. And he might have been like, I fucking hate this, but I have to do it because he's a performer. Or it they might have said, female. Oh, I don't know why I assumed it was a male. Probably because we're talking about a male character. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the female narrator, she could have come up with that on her own because she was supposed to be doing different accents or something like that. And she's like, well, I can do a German accent. But then at the same time, it might have been a legitimate choice.
So he does come from Europe. So this was – I was trying to kind of find another reason why they might justify that he has a German accent. Mm-hmm. And he does come from Europe. That part is canon. So the where Cinder and Kai live is like the Asia area. And then mm-hmm. Dr. Erland and other people, they come from Europe. So they still have the established America, Europe, Asia, those continents. So he did come from Europe canonically. However, Dimitri is an Italian name.
Dimitri could be Italian, depending on how it's spelled. It could be Russian, mm-hmm. could be Czech, or it could be Italian.
Yeah, because I looked it up and I was like, is this a German name in any way, shape, or form? And it really kind of is not. Oh.
Which, this is jumping ahead for sure, but I really love how diverse the entire cast of characters of this entire series is, because when you get to book two, Scarlett is French. Literally, she's from France. So there's just a lot of diversity all around in the worldwide in the entire story. And I can't remember. Yes. And then Cress is lunar, legit lunar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of my only thing. It was for the most part. Like, that's and Nazi I do like shit. That they had. Yeah, that's Nazi shit. It did have a very diverse cast from diverse areas. I love that it was not America centric because so mm-hmm. often books are America centric and
especially young adult. They're very just like focused in one area.
Exactly. And so I did really appreciate that it was diverse, and also like just gotta love that steampunk, diesel punk. I would call this more diesel punk, but
really
like,
I would consider it cyberpunk.
Yeah, you know what? You are absolutely right. It would be cyberpunk.
Yes, I'm so actually sorry. Right about something. Yeah, you said diesel punk and I was like, Yes, well, but definitely
my character
cyberpunk.
That I'm voice acting is Diesel Punk, so I'm like,
oh,
Diesel
you've
Punk
got it
best.
On the brain. Yeah, no, definitely cyberpunk. Yeah, I love how there's all that technology, but it's also still very gritty.
It was very genuinely, it was a Cinderella story. It followed the correct plot lines. I did hate that it was a cliffhanger, though. I was actually very frustrated. I was like, this could have been wrapped up in one book. So I was kind of grumpy when it was like, this audiobook was read by. So, and I was like, what? Are you fucking kidding me?
Well,
because I wasn't prepared for it. I was waiting for like, I don't know. I didn't get my happy ending. Like, ironically, I was very frustrated. I was like, Cinderella is a happy ending. I didn't get my happy ending. So get fucked.
But
like, it's ironic that I was mad about that.
But is Cinderella really a happy ending? Because if you have watched Into the Woods or if you've read the actual Cinderella story, it's not always a happy ending. We always think of it as a happy ending, but her stepsisters cut their toes and heels off to fit their feet into the shoes, and their shoes filled with blood. So it's actually a very dark story. And when you watch, Into the Woods is its own retelling, but that one is definitely not a happy ending either. So there's some very interesting things going on there. I know you said you don't intend on reading the second book.
I don't.
I would
I really
highly,
don't.
If you love Aiko, you need to continue reading.
I just was really frustrated. I kind of like it really made me mad that it was a, like, that it was multiple books. I would have liked it to be one book. And I don't know.
Yeah, but there's a lot more. There's a lot more story to tell. I understand the TBR is very long, but if you love Aiko, you need to keep reading because there's some, like, good shit that happens.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's enough talking about Nazi shit. And I mean, it is important to note that this book was written in a different time and
it was not written in 2020.
Yeah, and it's just...
And now we know you're supposed to wear a face mask if there's a fucking pandemic plague.
And I mean, I think that it is kind of a privilege to be able to read a book and not be like, oh, I didn't notice the Nazi undertones, which that could just be reaching. It could be me just kind of being hyper-vigilant of it. But, you know, I still think that... it did hold up to it. I just felt like the way that they did this one certain character was just really, really odd and really yikes, and I did not like it. And once again, if it was written in 2020 and it was, like, about a pandemic, I feel like that book would not be received well. but I also think that there would have been more of, like, social distancing and the prince would not hold a ball or things like that. So I do think that the prince is partially responsible for the spread of leptomosis because... because he was just, I mean, like, his dad had leptomosis, and he's, like, he's just walking around in public. Excuse me, sir, contact tracing, please. Like,
you might be a carrier. You could be an asymptomatic carrier.
Exactly. Anyways, well, and that's the thing that I thought about. This is my last thing, is I actually, like, the fact that leptomosis comes on so quickly, but it, like, you know, it spreads through a crowd. I was thinking, like, what if there are asymptomatic carriers, and so, like, that's why randomly in the middle of a crowd it'll break out, and I was like, man, these people should really be social distancing, or they should be sheltering in place. Like,
well, I gotta double check and see when it was published, because believe it or not, there was a time when not the majority of the population was not quite so well read in pandemics and plagues and how viruses are spread. Yeah. So I feel like there's things that we know and take as, like, common knowledge that at one point was not necessarily common knowledge. But anyway, we're coming up on 30 minutes of discussion of my book.
Yeah, we should be done with this now.
But I appreciate that you liked it and that you were able to finish it and that it was an easy read, because I wanted to give you something that was pretty easy to read and to digest, which you did not give to me, but we will talk about that momentarily.
I'm so ready.
All right. Well, we will be back in a moment, and Bronwyn will introduce...
the Manual of Detection.
We'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Burr Martin, the Internet Selfie Dad. Join me and my wife as we talk about all the weird news from around the world.
Mirror reports a married couple have slammed strangers for assuming their grandfather and granddaughter because of their 30-year age gap. Defiant Chelsea, 22, says they're happier than ever after the first meeting in a coffee shop. Bruce, a 52-year-old retired car dealer, offered his recommendations on coffee, and the pair hit it off from there. They say that...
you recommend a good bean, I guess you get a hot chick.
Wow. Gave her the hot bean. They say that they've been inseparable ever since they met. Bruce said, "I never thought someone Chelsea's age would be interested in me. She has an old soul." Insider.
Wow. I just knew that there were some really bad jokes rolling around. No, you just grabbed out both hands, white knuckles, didn't you?
Name of his sex tape.
So subscribe now to the Burr Martin Experience podcast. It's a weird world out there. Let's laugh at it together.
All right, everybody, we're back from our break, and now we are going to talk about the book that I gave Allie to read, which is The Manual of Detection by Jedediah Barry, and how to describe this book. The way that I read it was that it was essentially kind of making fun of the noir tropes that you will often see in the noir books that take themselves very seriously. It is a book where a detective dies, and so his clerk then takes up his role. He is given the manual of detection, and even though he has the wrong hat for doing detectiving, in case you were wondering, he wears a trilby instead of the usual detective hat, and that is very frowned upon. He is given the manual of detection, and he's kind of thrown into detectiving. Charles
detectiving?
Unwin. Detectiving, yes. Charles Unwin, the main character, he's kind of unassuming. The only thing he's good at is riding his umbrella or riding his bike and not getting himself wet by having his umbrella in front of him. And just kind of a lot of weird things happen. He kind of runs into a lot of people, and he is searching for Sivert, who is missing or dead or whichever it is. But yeah, basically that's it. It's a very absurd book, and I enjoy it a lot. So I will go ahead and let Allie tell us what she inevitably hated about this book, because I figured this one would be tough for her. And I just would like to say that I do truly love this book. I laugh the whole entire time that I'm reading this book, and nobody has ever given me the same feedback, so let's hear it.
Okay, well, let's start with a compliment sandwich of sorts. So things I did not hate about this book compared... Things I didn't hate about the book compared to other imaginative fiction, surrealist kind of stuff that you've given me is that it actually had a singular direction of the plot. It, like, it started at point A and it went all the way to point B. There was a bit of meandering along the way and some distortion of time, which got very confusing for me. But ultimately, it had several plot points. And as you know, that's something that I really desire in a book, is that it has plot points and that is moving. So I was able to vibe with it, as you say.
Yes, you vibe
because it was moving in a general direction, and I was able to keep track of the general plot, where they were, what was happening. It did have the plot points that I was looking for, point A to point B, and things in between. Things that I did not like, and these are complaints that I have had about other books that you have given me, and admittedly points that you gave me with the last book that you were supposed to read but you didn't finish, but it's fine.
Sorry.
Because, and this is the thing, is that it's an audiobook, and so sometimes it can be hard to keep track of all the characters if you're a little bit more of a visual person. And so sometimes I think that maybe I shouldn't go for the audiobook, because am I hurting my ability to follow the story simply because I'm listening to an audiobook? But I'm much more likely to finish the book if I'm doing audiobook, because I'm, you know, the only spare time I have now is when I'm doing laundry, when I'm doing chores. You know, I can't read while I do those things. So there was a lot of characters, and I felt like some of the characters were kind of unnecessary to the story, and that got really confusing, because there's Colonel Baker, there's Sivir, there's the Watcher, there's the Overseer, and then there's, like, all the clerks and the underclerks, and then there's his assistant, and then there's, like, the two Greenwoods. There's just
several femme fatales.
Yes, several femme fatales. So, again, compliment sandwich. I enjoyed the humor of it, and I was able to follow along with some of the more surrealist elements, and it didn't take me so far out of the story that I was like, I wasn't sitting there like, what the fuck, why is this happening? I was able to follow it, but it was a bit more surrealist in the beginning of the story, and then it just goes straight up fantasy, and then all of a sudden, and admittedly, I haven't actually seen the movie Inception. My husband has, and he has told me about it. And so
Wait. You've never seen Inception?
I've never watched Inception, which I feel that had I seen that movie, this book would have made more sense, because I was reading the book. I was like, oh, this kind of like
this reminds- book does actually kind of have some Inception vibe.
Yes.
You're correct.
Yeah. But I've never seen the movie, but there were several points where I was confused about where they were, and then I started to wonder by the end of the book, is this a dream within a dream? Because I got confused about how much time had passed. But then, and I kept kind of expecting and waiting for there to be sort of like, because the way my husband explained it to me is that there's almost kind of a, he explained it as like a stomp stomp, like a floor stomp kind of a thing. Like, we're going into another level of the dream now, that would kind of signal you that they were going into the next level. But that didn't always happen. Like, it was clear when he was at the ball, or like the cat and tonic, which the names for the places that they go is fucking hilarious, and I loved it. Cat and tonic for the nightclub that they go to, where everybody's sleepwalking, so, and then the bar is the 40 winks, and so it starts laying that groundwork right from the beginning that it's going to be about sleeping, but it's not super obvious right from the beginning. Even though in one of the first scenes, you know, he's late to work or late to his routine because he kind of had a weird sleep and he woke up late, which then you learn is completely a part of the greater plot, where they're stealing everyone's alarm clock so that they don't wake up. So then they're susceptible to the somnambulance hypnosis. It just gets really weird.
It's so good.
It's so crazy. I enjoyed the concept of it. I liked the idea of it, but the execution was just kind of weird how it ended up going, because it's surrealist and imaginative fiction, it doesn't really explain things. And then, so I wasn't sure if he was awake or asleep when he goes to the underclerks. I know that he sleeps for a time, but then I remembered that it was very, very early on in the story that he has to chain up his bike either in front of his office building, the detective agency. He either chains up his bike in front of the detective agency or in front of Cat and Tonic. Or was it in front of 40 Winks? I can't remember. But he chains up his bicycle.
I can't remember. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, sorry. Well, but this is what I'm talking about. This is like the knock that happens that lets you know like which layer you are in. Because the whole time, like once you realize that there is like some of the time you're dreaming and some of the time you're not. And then there's almost like immersive dreaming. So I almost wondered if it was like Inception where you can dream within your dream. Because he talks about dozing off and people are dreaming within their dream. So if you're dreaming within your dream, are you awake or are you in a deeper state of dream that can be infiltrated? Because then he goes back and he gets his bike. And I remember he chained up his bike very early on in the story. And then when he's getting the message, this is so convoluted for anyone who's never, like, hold on, no, just follow this train of thought. So people who are listening to this that haven't read the book are going to be like, what the fuck is she talking about? Because it's that crazy. This is the kind of shit that she makes me read.
I'm not capable
of vibing. I need to do a psychoanalysis. Anyway, just hear me out. Hear me out. Okay. So he chains up his bike at, I can't remember what place. He gets the message. So he goes to the underclerks, and I'm convinced he was sleepwalking when he went to the underclerks, and he goes through the trap door and he goes down like two layers deeper into like the underclerk storage where he falls asleep to listen to the message, because you have to be dreaming to get the message from like the records, because they record dreams onto records, like the actual like records that you used to like wicka wicka like record stuff on. So this is gold. Anyway,
I just, like, when you describe like the way that like I come into this being like, I don't think this book is that wild. Like, sure, I'm like, this book is quirky, but it's not that wild. And
no.
Then you describe my books, and it just makes it sound like I have given you, like, an indecipherable book to read.
Because like, you did. Listen, okay. No, listen. Listen, Linda, listen. Okay? So he goes into the underclerks. He's gone down, like, two layers. He goes through a trapdoor. He talks to a literal giantess who is packing gunpowder and making explosives. Okay, how is that not fucking weird? Anyway, he goes to sleep.
How do you know that she's not real?
I'm not saying she isn't real, but yeah. I'm saying that she's sleeping because sleeping people still interact with each other. But when you are asleep and sleep interacting with each other, you both appear awake to each other. So he's talking to the giantess. She's real, for sure. But he's dreaming when he meets her. Then he goes to sleep in the underclerk place where they're listening to the records or recording records. And he listens to the message from his watcher, which the watcher then goes, like, doubly into dreams because it's his dream. He thinks he's awake, but then he's not actually awake, and he continues to go about his day as if he was awake, but he wasn't awake. He just thought that he was awake. And that's how Unwin is able to witness his murder, because the watcher, Lanik, yeah, I think is his name, he didn't realize he was awake, and he got trapped in the dream with the bad guy, and the bad guy kills him. And that inadvertently gets recorded because he's still dreaming.
Then you probably were really frustrated by how sometimes when you die in the dream, you die in real life, but sometimes when you die in the dream, you don't die
in real life. But I think it was like, it was the skill of the person infiltrating your dream, and that was like a double infiltration of a dream. And then from there, he hops over to Sivert's memory of a dream that goes all the way back to the very beginning of the story, because one of the first things is that Unwin walks into his bathroom and sees Sivert in his bathtub drinking the whiskey and, like, having a bubble
bath. That's reoccurring. That's kind of the main... If anything, I would say that that would be the knock at the door.
But here's...
That was kind of a big clue, is that, like, then, when Sivert was in his bathtub.
Exactly. But also, like... Lanik says, I'm not sure when you're getting this, time moves differently here. So there's all these things that happen, and it seems like it's happening over the course of several days. Unwin talks about going to sleep and then waking up. But then once it kind of gets to the point before he has all of the answers, he's gone all these places, he slept and he's woken up multiple times, when he finally has the answers, and then he has to go get Miss Greenwood and wake her up again for a final time, and they get on the train and go to find the actual Sivert. He goes and he picks up his bicycle, which was chained at the very beginning of the story. And so all of this multi-day event, even when he was waking and sleeping, he was sleeping the whole time, and he was like doubly sleeping, which happens in the Inception, like you go into a deeper level of a dream. And it wasn't until he got his bicycle again that he was actually awake, is my theory. And that's the knock, to say, like, whether, because really this whole story makes you wonder, like, not only what is real and what is not is real, because I think that all of these things are real. This is what makes it imaginative fiction and rather than surrealist, is that they're actually going into each other's dreams and stealing secrets and impacting each other in the dream world. This is not surrealist where we're like, are they dreaming? Like, no, he actually goes in and dreams, and like Sivert was trapped in a dream and he tricks the guy because he doesn't know if he's awake or sleeping or not. So that's my logic that I'm applying to it.
Can I be real with you?
Yeah.
I just vibe with that book. I just vibe with that book, man.
You're fucking vibing with the book. How can you read something and have it not make sense to you?
It did make sense. I mean, like...
But you don't know at what points he's sleeping and what points he's awake. Because there was, like, so many times that I was like, fuck, I don't know what's happening right now. I don't know if he's asleep. I don't know if he's awake.
I mean, well...
And are there multiple layers of dreaming?
Well, but I mean, think of it, like, that's the way that, like, it is when you're dreaming. Like, when you are dreaming, you don't know if you're awake or if you're asleep. Mm-hmm. And it can be, like, fairly frustrating. And, like, you know, these weird things are happening. And, I mean, I kind of feel like...
But I kept waiting for, like, the symbol, because the one thing I do remember or know about Inception is, you know, I do go onto Pinterest and Tumblr, and I like to read people's crackpot theories about shows that I don't watch. Don't ask me why this is a thing I enjoy. But I've seen different theories about Inception and what people will have a symbol or an item that anchors them that allows them to know.
That's not a theory. That actually happens in the movie.
Well, no, but they were saying that, like, his token wasn't actually his token because it was, like, was it dice or a coin that he would flip, that he would spin?
He spun a die. It was a dreidel or something. Like,
top. But the theory is that that wasn't actually it, because the totem or the token has to belong to that person, and that totem belonged to somebody else. But what it actually was the ring on his finger, and whether he had the ring on his finger or not let him know if he was dreaming or if he was awake, because only in the dream he wore his wedding ring. And
we could talk about Inception theories, because, like, the whole thing was that the top actually belonged to his wife because she's seen using the totem. But anyway, so
I thought the bicycle was his totem, or that there would be at some point.
Well, but this is an Inception. It's not Inception. Like, that's
no, but I was like waiting for there to be some sort of tell or clue that they would be like, how, so that they could know whether they were dreaming or not.
Why would they? I mean, if they,
because that's how the bad guy was caught. He was so lost in the dream world that he didn't know what was real and what was a dream anymore.
Wait, Allie, what if his totem was his hat, and how every time somebody comments about his hat, that's when he's actually dreaming.
It could be.
See, that's why you vibe with it. That's why you vibe, because I noticed the hat with it. Did you even notice that he's wearing a trophy? No. It's a great fucking hat.
No. They mention the hat all the time. They're like, you're wearing the wrong hat, man. Like, they're not gonna tolerate that. And really, this whole book is about a guy trying to get his job back. That's what this book really is about. It's a guy trying to get his job back. So... did I like the book? Kind of no. But I
didn't expect it.
But there was enjoy. Like, I enjoyed. It's weird because I didn't like the plot, but I enjoyed the way in which the plot was written. If that makes sense, I enjoyed the dialogue. I liked the jokes. I thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed the noir aspect. Yeah.
That's the part that I thought was really great, was if you have read, like, old noir or Sherlock novels or anything like that, this book really does kind of have a similar vibe or, like, a similar tone where it like, you know, the femme fatale and the detective can't help but fall in love with this person even though she keeps lying to him, and
the male character
that is, like, completely nondescript, that, like, you know,
I just remembered something though. Okay, so I got super excited because, okay, so there's Greenwood older, like the older Greenwood, Cleo. And Siver has, like, a relationship with her, right? He was the one that fell in love with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there comes the point when they're in Siver's dream, and Penelope, which is Cleo's daughter, shows up. And she says – and Siver says, hey, kiddo. And then she says, like, Dad, I'm here to talk to you. I thought she was talking to Siver. And I had this moment, like, oh, man, I knew it. I was so excited that I had figured that out. And then Siver wasn't her dad. And I was super disappointed. I was like, that would have been the perfect plot twist. And
well,
that
was a travesty. He was a travesty. His name was Travis T. Siver.
Are you fucking kidding me?
He was a travesty. I see. I think this book is so much fun.
I just blue screened. Like, why? But, like, why? That would have been such a better story. if it was Sivir and Cleo having this illicit affair, and then they have the daughter together, and he's like, and he even says kiddo, so maybe he felt like he was her father.
So you would
and
say that it was a travesty.
I hate you so much right now.
How did you not catch that his name was a pun? That, like, Sivir's character is basically,
because I listened
like, just
to absolute the audiobook. Because I listened like you, to the audiobook.
You are not supposed to enjoy Travis T. Sivert.
Oh, my God. They just called him Sivir through the whole thing. So, no, anyway, so I feel like that was a total missed opportunity. I guess I will settle for the fact that Sivir felt like he was a father figure to her.
I think it's fun. I just think it's neat.
I mean, it was fun. I didn't like the plot. But it was fun. So there were things that I definitely enjoyed about it, but overall the plot kind of sucked, but like all the other stuff was good. I don't know. It was weird. Why do you read weird shit? I shouldn't judge you because I read weird shit too.
See, here's the thing is that our weird shit is like, it's weird in its own way.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what makes this podcast so beautiful is that we both read weird shit, but it's a very different brand of weird shit.
I just can't wait to give you like your first reverse harem. Like I'm really just waiting
you
for
think
it.
I have no experience with reverse harem books. Like this, we talked about this in our pilot episode.
I know, I'm just like harem. But the thing is like I'm trying to find the perfect reverse harem for you, so that's why you haven't gotten one yet. I'm having to screen several, so just so you know, I've read a lot of reverse harem lately just for your benefit. But anyway, I don't think
for my benefit.
Yes. So, but anyway, I don't think I really have much more to say about this. It's noir. It's cool. If you don't care much about plot, you might like this. It was legitimately funny. I was confused about the characters. The lady with the crooked teeth, like the assistant, I don't really understand what her purpose was.
She would have been another kind of like hint as to when he was sleeping or deeper sleeping, because she often nodded off.
And that's the thing is like for someone who is supposedly asleep all the time, I keep saying I'm done and I'm like, oh wait, there's one more thing. Because she kept talking about how she was never able to be awake, but she was always awake when she was with Unwin. So maybe every time he's with her and she's awake, he's actually asleep.
I also like how close the main character's name is to my name. I enjoyed listening to the audiobook. I would hear him say Unwin, and I would be like, what? Oh.
No, yeah. I actually thoroughly enjoyed that, because, like, in my head, it was like, it's Detective Bronwyn.
It's Detective Bronwyn, yes. Yeah. I really liked Unwin as a character, and I relate like a lot Unwin. To him. And yeah. I just love the whole concept of, like, him being given the manual of detection, and he, like, refuses to read it.
He's like, this would be so improper. I cannot, sir. This is not okay. Yeah, no, I really like that, because he's like, nope, there is order to things, and then his life promptly becomes the most disordered it's ever been.
Yeah, and he also refuses to take off his hat. He is like, this is my hat. I don't care if it's not a detective hat.
I am a clerk. And when he was like, well, how am I? He's like, the amount of reports I'm going to have to write to make sense of this. I thought that was really hilarious. That really spoke to the inceptionist, if that's a word, nature of things. Because he's like, well, I have to write a report about this, which then I'm going to have to write another report about why I was writing a report as a detective when I'm not supposed to be writing a report as a detective, and I'm gonna have to make so many addendums. So I did find that to be funny. The characters were funny, but overall I feel like the plot missed a few things, and there were like several points where I was like, what the fuck is happening? I'm so lost right now. And then I would just be like, man, I'll just vibe with it. I will probably understand more when we get to the next chapter, and then I'll figure it out as it goes along.
Hell yeah. Well, I think we probably have fleshed out as much as we can, or really as much as we should, because honestly, like, I just, like, I thought it was really funny listening to you and your theories, because I just didn't feel the need to really understand it. I laughed the whole time and I enjoyed it very much. So, but I'm glad that you like got some enjoyment out of it. As always, you didn't just like outright fucking hate it. So. Yeah.
Well, I'm always trying to look on the bright side, man. Like that's my thing. I'm always going to try to find the positive. But anyway, so we should wrap it up and then we'll come back and introduce our next episode's challenge, which is going to be extra special.
It is extra special. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. Alrighty, so we are back and we are going to introduce our books to each other. It's going to be a very special episode. So
wait, but I get to go first this week, right?
No, I think it's actually my turn to go first.
No.
Okay, well, so anyway, I was going to have you read a book called Midnight Sun.
No, I was going to have you read Midnight Sun.
This is so stupid, but I love it. We came up with this.
We came
up with this before we started recording, and I was like, this is going to be so funny. Just you wait.
We got to be honest with you guys. We just really want to read Midnight Sun.
And we just really want to read Midnight Sun.
Yeah, and it's our podcast. We can do whatever the fuck we want, and we want to read Midnight Sun.
We both have not read Midnight Sun either, so we are going to read Midnight Sun together.
We've been talking about this ever since they started, or Stephanie Meyer started teasing this earlier this year, and we're like, oh my gosh. If this
we
is
should
real,
have a special Midnight Sun.
Yes, episode. Like where we both read Midnight Sun and just
I thought that it was like fucking fake though. She was like, "Oh, Midnight Sun is going to get released." And I was like, "Yeah, right. They've like this literally gets announced. It's like 32 Thoroughbreds. Like 32 Thoroughbreds, a second season of Oran High School Host Club,
which
and
as a
Midnight
horse person, I fucking hate the 35 34 free Thoroughbreds. I get
it's
tagged
32.
In 32 free Thoroughbreds. I get tagged in that fucking thing every single year. And I'm like, stop tagging me in it. It's not real.
So I did not think that Midnight Sun was actually going to come out, but it is here. And so as promised, I will be reading it. And the funny thing is that we have actually been waiting for this book since 2008. And that was initially when it was supposed to be released, but then 12 chapters got leaked. I didn't know it was that much of the manuscript, but 12 whole chapters got leaked. And Stephanie Meyer kind of was like, all right, well, get fucked then. Like,
yeah.
Not really. She did not actually say that. She didn't say that, but
like emotionally, she was like, yeah, get fucked. And she was like not in the right headspace,
so
which
her
was
exact
totally
quote,
justified.
Her exact quote was, if I tried to write Midnight Sun now in my current frame of mind, James would probably win and all the columns would die, which wouldn't dovetail too well with the original story. In any case, I feel too sad about what has happened to continue working on Midnight Sun, so it is on hold indefinitely. So she did make the 12 chapter draft available on her website so that people
which
could
I
kind
read
of like,
back in the day, and when it cuts off after the 12th chapter, I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. I need the rest of this. And I was so disappointed. Mm-hmm. So disappointed that I couldn't finish it.
Yeah. So, and Allie and I, if you listen to our Patreon episode, you would already know this, but you're not a patron. Here's looking at you, the person who's listening who is not a pan-spending patron. So we did discuss how Allie and I did read Twilight together when I was in high school and she was in college. We actually kind of read the books together. I would say that Allie was a bigger fan than I was.
And really, when we started talking about it, realized that me forcing her to read Twilight was OG Trading Pages. And yeah, really is like the heart and soul of this whole project, because we're like, oh my gosh, it really goes all the way back over 10 years. Well, mm-hmm. How many years now? It's 2020.
It's 2008 is when Midnight Sun came out. So it was like, it had to have been like 2005, 2006.
Yeah, because I was a freshman. No, I was a senior in college.
Hold on. I'm going to look it up. I have to know. When was
I feel
Twilight
like
released?
Maybe. Because it was.
Hey, Google. When was Twilight released?
it
didn't work.
Oh, well, because, like, this is really throwing it back, but I remember, because, like, I kind of got really obsessed with it because My husband, well, he was my boyfriend at the time. Now my husband was deployed to Afghanistan. And I went into this like weird.
So he was your fiance, by the way.
No, he wasn't my fiance yet. Oh, when really I first started reading it. No, because it was, yeah, because I started reading it in the fall. So that was my senior year of college. And I started reading it in the fall because I was working the, I was working a lot. I was working the front desk a lot. I was a hall director.
Oh, so it is October 5th, 2005. Oh, so this will, oh my gosh, it'll be like the 15 year anniversary of Twilight when we release our Twilight episode.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. That's so cute.
Yeah. So, I mean, and we'll actually, I should save this for when we actually talk about it. But like it was, and not necessarily because it was a super great book, but like it became a refuge for me during a really difficult point in my life. There was a lot of stuff that happened to me. There was a lot of stuff that happened to me and you kind of during that time. And somehow Twilight became my safe space of like all books that you could read. Like some people dive into Anna Karenina and I went like total like way down the rabbit hole of Twilight. And yeah,
I think it is also important to note, I think that this is something that should be said, is, and Allie and I have talked about this before, but we are not unaware of the somewhat problematic nature of Twilight and sort of the way that Edward has kind of an interesting way of courting Bella, and
we just go like into most this,
romance books.
Yeah, we go into this eyes fully open. We like we understand, and so we don't want any of this to be misconstrued as we are promoting stalker behavior or anything like that. Exactly. This really is a nostalgia type thing, and I contend that, you know, there are a lot of problematic sort of scenarios that come up in romance. And there's a difference between problematic and like downright taboo and wrong versus, you know, the damsel in distress, I'm not like other girls, like clumsy Bella tropes that are like, now we can roll our eyes at, but they're not necessarily damaging.
So I do think that it is easy enough to, you know, to be aware of that. But, you know, we're reading it so that we can, and, you know, like, I mean, really, it's just, it's not horrific to enjoy problematic things sometimes. I just think that the most important part is that you are aware and that you know that it exists. And I already have a prediction that I probably am going to be way more harsh on Midnight Sun than Allie is.
I don't know. So I think I'm going to be pretty harsh on it because I'm in a totally different place in my life now. That's a completely different place. Like I was in, I don't want to say that I was in a terrible place when I first started reading Twilight, but I mean, it was a really challenging time of my life. And so I definitely did not look at it in the same way. And, you know, because of where I'm at, my perspective on things has changed, and based off of kind of revisiting the first couple of chapters, you know, I'm interested to see, and I don't know that I'm going to be as kind to it as maybe you imagine I would be. We'll see.
Well, I definitely will be interested to see how this comes out. But yes, Allie and I are going to be reading the same book. And along with that, we are also trying to find ways to have guests on the show.
This is really exciting. I'm excited about this.
I am excited about it as well. There's going to be a little bit of experimentation. I don't know if people are going to be super into it. And especially because we have a once a month publishing schedule now, we're going to be doing the first Monday of every month is when we are going to be posting our episodes. I think that it is it's going to be kind of a longer process to be able to introduce guests, but I think that it is exciting. And if you think that you are swell enough to be a guest on our show, we definitely would be willing to have somebody you know, random coming in as long as you have a fairly decent mic.
Yeah. I mean, we are not experts. We are not book critics. I like to say that I am writing. I am not a writer, but that's just something that I do for fun. So I do not, neither of us pretend to be experts. And so really, if you love books and if you would like to challenge us with a book, we are here and we would like to trade pages with you because, you know, Bronwyn and I have a lot of books that we can trade with each other. But we think it would
but
be really.
We do have exhaustible, you know, exhaustible material because Allie and I also read a lot of the same books and have read a lot of the same books.
Yeah.
So
we thought it would be fun to open it up and bring some other people in. So I don't think we're gonna, I mean, we may have a little teaser at the end of this episode as to who our first challenger or challengers may be. But
oh, no, that will not be until next episode.
Oh, okay. Okay. No. So it'll be, yes. Okay. Gotcha. So, so listen to this episode and then we'll have a Patreon episode and then, let's see, what month is it?
This is why it takes so long. So at the end of October, we will have a teaser as to who our guest will be on the next show.
Yes. Yep.
So it's an extended process and we could have done it this episode. But we wanted to read Midnight Sun because it's our podcast. We do what we want.
Yeah.
Us in any of the ways that we talk about in our outro. If you are a random person listening to this podcast and you say, I would like to be involved, then hit us up for real. Yeah. And we can only our friends to be a part of the podcast for
and
so long.
Even better, leave us a voicemail. We already have one voicemail. We'll should be sharing it with you eventually, but even better, leave a voicemail on on the Anchor app. It's really easy. You find our podcast on Anchor, Trading Pages Podcast, Trading Pages on Anchor, and you click leave us a voicemail. So leave us a voicemail. Tell us why you would like to come on the show and what book you would like to challenge us with. Give us like a little synopsis about it or whatever you want to do, and we'll let you know if, you know, we can get a date for you to come on the show. Yes. We'd love to have you.
Also, if you listen after the outro, there's going to be an extended trailer for Station Arcadia. So please give that a listen because I know that ELISD worked really hard on the trailer, kind of worked hard to pump it out. So that will be at the end of this podcast. So please give that a listen as well. And cue the outro, Lally.
All right. So thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can find it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you stream your podcasts. We are hosted by Anchor FM, and we are a part of the Pants Pending Studios Entertainment Network. Make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss any of our new episodes, and leave us a voicemail on the Anchor app. You might even appear in one of our episodes. You can also become a supporter, which we really appreciate because books are not cheap. Send us an email at tradingpagespodcast@gmail.com.
Join us on our next episode where we discuss... Holy crap.
Did you forget already? We're reading Midnight Sun.
I'm not cutting this out. I have goldfish brain and this is proof.
Literally, we just talked for 10 straight minutes about Midnight Sun. On our next episode, coming out in October, we will be talking about Midnight Sun by who's
by
that lady?
Stephanie
Meyer.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
1. You are listening to Station Arcadia. The Station Arcadia podcast tells stories from a dystopian world where dieselpunk, steampunk, cyberpunk, and solarpunk societies all exist side by side. These diverse stories are told through a radio station on a shifting island and given voice by the station's host, Cassandra.
He breaks into a gallop, leaning low over his horse's neck as more shots fly past him.
Did that man just try to offer jerky as a consolation prize for someone's daughter?
November, year 405. Altitude unknown. I'm scared. I fear for my life, as it takes so very much out of me to write this.
What's radio?
Woven through each standalone story are threads that come together to tell the story of a revolution and hope in the face of a dying world.
I understand enough. The revolution still has hope, and I want to help.
Breaks in the narration bring us on site to each society, where we hear four unique and powerful stories.
Just tell me you didn't say you hated Jebediah to his face.
I didn't say I hated him to his face.
Stop squirming.
You're going to drop me.
I won't drop you as long as you don't move so much.
I can lift myself through the window. Let me just... Ow.
You just agreed to make fishing illegal.
Shut up, fluffers.
Also, it's queer. Station Arcadia broadcasts Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Listen from the start for the full picture, or jump in anywhere to make life interesting. Make sure to stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Tumblr, at Station Arcadia. Transcripts and additional information are available at stationarcadia.com. Remember, listeners, stay safe, stay moving, and stick close. You've been listening to Station Arcadia, the promo.
I wish I had cyborg hands. Whoa. I want a cyborg arm.
Holy shit. Hold on. I have to pull up the fuck.
I have to pull up the fuck, says Allie.
Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep.
I really do want cyborg arms, though. Allie, can you get me that for Christmas?
Dude, I totally would. Think you would never get carpal tunnel from dog grooming ever again.